Hello, welcome along. It is the Fun Kids Science Weekly. My name's Dan. Thank you so much for giving us a listen. It's actually the final Fun Kids Science Weekly before Christmas. So I'm thinking, no matter what you end up getting for the big day, at least I can give you the present of making your brain loads bigger with all the smart stuff that we'll talk about that's happening all around the universe today. This week, we'll head to the part of the ocean that is so deep, no sunlight manages to make it down there. Also, we'll catch up with the latest trials of the Bloodhound car. This is the rocket-powered car that's trying to break the land speed record. We'll also get some predictions for 2020 from some smart people that study that sort of thing. And I've got some of your questions that you've sent over to the Apple Podcast Store to answer for you. Today, they're all about scary things and goosebumps. We'll get to that after we catch up with one of our favourite geniuses here on the show. His name is Sir Sidney McSprocket, and he lets us know how things that we use every single day are made.
How's it made?
Oh, hello. Sir Sidney McSprocket here. I've been in action capturing facts all about manufacturing. It's for this rather splendid stipendiary compendium I'm compiling. You just ask it how something is made, and it'll oblige with a fulsome explanation. Take this, for example, a plastic bottle. A common enough item, and one with which you'll be well acquainted. But how is a plastic bottle made? Many plastic bottles are made of a substance called PET. That's short for polyethylene terephthalate. It makes bottles that are lightweight and strong, useful when bottles are used for food and drinks.
Step one.
Pellets of PET and recycled plastics are loaded into special ovens and heated to 260 degrees centigrade so that it melts. This melted plastic is then injected into small molds. That's like a hollow space that shapes the plastic into long, thin tubes.
Step two.
The tubes are reheated and placed in bottle-shaped molds, where high-pressured air inflates them to fill the mold and to take their final shape.
Step three.
Sometimes, to make sure that the bottom of each bottle has a flat shape to help it stand up straight, another piece of plastic is joined to the bottle during the molding process.
Step four.
The bottles must be cooled instantly, or they will lose their shape as the warm plastic will creep downwards. Sometimes cold water or liquid nitrogen might be circulated around the molds, or air is blown at room temperature.
Step five.
Like most manufacturing, it's important to test samples from the production line. Samples will be measured to make sure they're the right shape and size. They'll also be squashed to see how strong they are. Once ready, the finished bottles will be boxed up, ready for dispatch.
Step six.
The final step is putting a cap onto the bottle. This is done by the food company after the drink or food has been added. Whilst plastic is a very versatile material, it can take hundreds of years to decompose naturally. That's why it's really important to recycle any that you use. Now, I must get on, but come back soon and find out more about manufacturing with my splendid stipendiary compendium.
How's it made? With support from the Royal Commission for the 1851 exhibition. Find out more at funkidslive.com.
Let's get to your questions then. Remember, if you've got anything sciencey that you're thinking about over the Christmas break, if you want it answered, just leave it as a review for the Fun Kids Science Weekly over on the Apple Podcast Store. Then I will see it. I will do all the work, all the hard graft to figure out the answer for you. Lily in California has asked quite a lot of questions. Now, we've covered some of them before, so very quickly, Lily, I will rattle through the first one. Wind blows because of hot air rising, which pushes cold air down, which causes pressure and airflow, which makes that air and the wind move. Another question, which I don't think we've ever covered before, actually, is why do we find things scary? It's pretty much because we have evolved as a species to try and stay alive at all costs. Evolution is survival of the fittest. You need to stay alive to become the fittest. So naturally, we are quite wary of things that might stop us staying alive. Now, mostly we become scared when we don't know what may be out there is threatening us. Frank McAndrew is a professor of psychology, and he studied the sensation of getting the creeps thoroughly. You know, when you get that tingly feeling all over, when you get the creeps, when you're not sure what's going on? Well, that's pretty much what it is. He defines that something is creepy when you are uncertain of a threat. You feel unease because you know there is something to worry about, but you're unsure what it is. So you're aware that you might need to act quickly, you might need to fight, maybe you need to run away. That's what getting the creeps is all about. Thank you so much for that, Lily. And the next question actually doesn't stroll too far from that. It's from Evelyn, who is 9. She's from the UK. She asks, why don't we get goosebumps on our face? Well, Evelyn, goosebumps are caused by little muscles that are attached to our hairs. And when the muscles contract, the hair stands up straight. Now, it's used in the animal kingdom to give extra warmth to creatures or to make them appear bigger, larger than they are, so they try and scare off maybe a threat or a predator. Now, for humans, it works for the same reasons. The problem is the hairs on our body are so small that it doesn't really make any difference. It doesn't keep us warm or anything, doesn't trap in the hot air. And also, we tend to not have these muscles, the ones that make the hair stand up on end, in parts of the body that do other things as well, like the palm of the hands. You don't get goosebumps there because it would get in the way when you're trying to grip stuff. They're not on the face because the muscles on there help us chew, help us smile, help us frown, and help us convey other important emotions. So pretty much very simply, Evelyn, the reason we don't get goosebumps on our face is because the skin there does more important things. It's the Fun Kids Science Weekly now as we move into the new year. I thought it made sense to kind of get some predictions about what's going to happen in the science and tech world next year in 2020. To help us out with that, we have Tris Dyson, who is the Executive Director of Nesta Challenges. They are an innovation foundation, and they've been spot on with predictions before. They figured out that we were going to have the emergence of meat-free meat. They got that one right, the rise of deepfake videos and also other controversies in the political landscape, and they're here to help us out. Hey, Tris.
Hello.
Thank you so much for joining us. So you've made your predictions for 2020. Can I ask you, before we get into them, how did Nesta come up with these?
Well, Nesta is a foundation, and we work with lots of brilliant entrepreneurs and innovators all around the world. And so we understand quite a lot of what's happening in the world of technology and business and enterprise. And we have a lot of people that are good at looking into the future. And every year we get together some of the brightest people in the organization and we look at the trends and we anticipate what's going to happen next.
So this year, well, for the last few years, you were very right with your prediction of the emergence of meat-free meat. Could you just take us back how you spotted that as a trend? What was giving you signs that would be happening, people would move towards a more plant-based diet?
Well, so this was, back in 2017. We saw that there was the emergence of some more meat-free products in certain parts of the world, particularly in the west coast of the United States. And we also saw that the cost was coming down significantly, that they were being marketed much more effectively, and that the reports of the taste were significantly improving. At the same time, there was this trend, and there still is this trend, where people are increasingly concerned about the environment and also about their own personal health. So more and more people are becoming vegetarian or vegan or just eating less meat. And so we could see that there was a big opportunity for meat-free burgers. And that's how we made that prediction.
Now, I've got a list of the 10 predictions that you've made in front of me. I'll just quickly run through a few of them. Stuff like, yep, we're going to start using digital twins to test out possible futures, things that we can do. We're going to have the drive towards cashlessness. I've picked out three that I'd like to run through with you, though, if that's all right, Tris. The first one is, yep, fireworks will be replaced with swarms of drones. What's all this about?
Yeah, well, you know, we've celebrated big events for centuries with firework displays. In the UK, that includes obviously Bonfire Night, Guy Fawkes Night, and in America, July 4th firework displays, and in India, Diwali. So you can think of these spectacular firework displays, of which we're all familiar with. But increasingly, we start to realise that they're quite damaging for the environment. So they put these little particulates in the air, so we breathe them in, so they're not very good. They can be quite distressing. If you have a cat or a dog, you probably know this, for animals, and cause a lot of distress for them. And also, they cause a lot of injury. Lots of people wind up in hospital. But we have this new technology, which is really exciting, which is drone technology, which is getting super, super sophisticated. And we're already starting to see people using drones to fly them lit up in the sky in formations in these beautiful patterns that are really quite dramatic. And they show you can have big sort of people walking across the sky or butterflies. You know, they transform in all sorts of different shapes and ways. And again, a bit like we were talking about with the burgers, the cost is getting down, but also the technology is improving. So actually, these drones are starting to talk to each other and have small brains in each drone using AI-based technology. So they can even start to react and respond to events. So we think that the future of drone displays is going to be these beautiful formations that actually respond to the oohs and the ahs of the crowd.
Wow.
And music and whatever's happening around them, and that are really responsive and reactive and fly around almost like flocks of starlings. And they're really, really exciting. I encourage people to look at some of the clips of some of the displays that are already starting to happen on YouTube and elsewhere.
Number two that I want to talk to you about is another way that doctors are trying to keep us healthy. Apparently, doctors will start prescribing eco-action to combat our eco-anxiety. Can you tell us more?
Yeah, well, this is a serious one, I think. There's an increasing concern that many of us have, particularly, I'd say, younger people, that the environment is on a bad path, and that people get very concerned about what the future might look like because of climate change and plastics in the ocean and the damage that we're doing to our environment. And the levels of anxiety is increasing and increasing and increasing. So in the UK, a third of people claim to have anxiety related to the environment. And for some people, it's so bad that it's making them really quite ill. And so they're visiting the doctor, and they're in distress, and they're very unhappy, and they feel that, you know, that they need perhaps doctor's help and medication and that sort of thing. It's that bad for some people. So we think that doctors are going to start responding to this by, as you say, prescribing eco-action. So rather than treating, fear of climate change with medication, which really wouldn't often be very effective, the idea that people will be encouraged and prescribed even to go out into the environment, to meet up with other people, to do things that are good and healthy in their local environment, like planting trees and helping with rewilding and that sort of thing. And that does two things. Going outside, doing something useful with other people, we know already that's very good for people's mental health and well-being. So doctors already prescribe this for people who are suffering from depression and anxiety and that sort of thing. But also doing something useful and proactive for the environment will help people to feel motivated and that they're doing something. And we think that this will be a very effective way at reducing people's eco-anxiety.
And the last one that I want to talk to you about is possibly one of my favourite ones. This could be some from like a dystopian telly show. Silly walks will become the latest way to avoid cameras tracking us. What is all that about?
Well, I mean, as you all know, when there's been increasing concern and controversy about governments in particular using cameras to use facial recognition technology in order to identify people. And some people are trying to evade that from happening by covering up their faces. And in other places, people are in going through the regulation and government and pressuring them to stop them doing it, as happened recently in King's Cross, where they wanted to introduce facial recognition and the public said, no, that's not okay. But there are other technologies that are using perhaps less obviously intrusive ways of doing the same thing. And one of them is technologies that can identify you by the way that you walk. And that can include cameras, but it can include pressure pads in the floor that then marry you up with camera technology and help identify you.
Wow.
So we think there's going to be much more of that. We can already see it happening in some places like Marbella, where the police are using this. And we think people are going to start to try and evade that too. And they may do that by walking funny to try and trick the cameras and try and trick the AI into not recognizing their walk. So we're suggesting that in 2020, people might want to or may start doing lots of wobbly, funny walks to avoid being identified.
Pressure pads that tell how you walk and can identify you from that. That is absolutely amazing, but utterly terrifying at the same time. Listen, Tris, also Nesta next year, they'll be doing the Longitude Explorer Prize. Can you tell us more about that?
Yes. So if you're in the UK and you're a student between the ages of 11 and 16, and you think that you want to become an entrepreneur in the future, and you've got some great ideas and particularly interested perhaps in what technology can do to come up with new wonderful solutions, then I would encourage people to look at the Longitude Explorer Prize. And what we're doing is we're inviting people to submit their ideas. So this is both teams and individuals to say this is what they would do with AI and with technology and how they would create a really interesting business idea. And if you don't know then what to do next, that's fine, because we've got access to some of the top business people and technology people in the country, and we will pick the teams and the individuals who we think have got the best ideas, and we will support them to develop their products, develop their business plans through this competition. And ultimately, we're going to have some winners in the summer of 2020 next year.
Fantastic. If you want to find out more about that, just give it a Google. Longitude Explorer Prize. You can also find them at nesta.org.uk. Listen, Tris, thank you so much for telling us more today.
No, that's great. It's been a pleasure.
It's time for this week's Dangerous Dan, where we are headed under the sea to the Midnight Zone. The Midnight Zone is around 1,021 metres down deep. It's that deep from the surface of the ocean. Now, it's called the Midnight Zone, as no sunlight is able to reach just how deep it is. If a human managed to dive down that deep, the pressure would almost certainly be too much and would crush them. Now, because it is so dark, many creatures down there have adapted to this by creating light themselves, and they look utterly terrifying. Take the anglerfish. They've got these horrendous sharp teeth, and they've almost got a rod from the top of their head that shines a beacon of light to lure prey in from the darkness. You've also got the orange ruffy fish down there that can live up to 200 years. And speaking as well of creatures that have lived for a long time, when you get down to the Midnight Zone, you'll also find the goblin sharks. And they're known in the science world as living fossils, because they're the only living species that was still around in some form 125 million years ago. Also in the Midnight Zone, hydrothermal vents of air are formed as seawater passes through volcanic rocks, and these release metals which are toxic to most creatures. It's highly deadly. Now, if you want to find out more about this, have a look at an amazing website. It's this scrolling, interactive kind of diagram that takes you right the way to the bottom of the ocean. It helped me do all this research. You want to go to neal.fun/deep-c. neal.fun/deep-c. And then you'll get to learn loads more about the dangerous Midnight Zone. Over the last couple of months, we have seen freak weather happening all around the planet. And all of those are interlinked by something called the climate. It's kind of a smart brain that controls all the weather around the world. It links these things and it's affected by loads of different circumstances. And we're learning all about that right now with our climate genius, Marina Ventura.
Marina Ventura's Climate Explorers.
Hi there, Marina Ventura here. I love finding out about the natural world, and that includes the Earth's climate. We know that weather can change from one day to the next, but climates can change too over the time span of years, centuries, or even longer. So I'm on a mission to fill MapApp with the latest climate information with the help of some awesome climate explorers. Come on then, let's go. We've been finding out that the climate naturally changes over time, but that humans are having an impact too. The planet is experiencing extreme weather conditions and rising sea levels, which are affecting not only humans, but all animals and plant life on Earth too.
Sometimes it's hard to feel like you can make a difference, or it can seem like the problems are so big that nothing will help. But that's not the case.
That's right. There's plenty you can do. Let's talk to another climate explorer who has some great tips for us.
Hi, I'm Rosita and I'm an energy scientist. The biggest cause of man-made climate change is the gases which are produced when we burn fossil fuels. We burn them to produce energy in power stations that creates electricity so that we can power lights and gadgets. We also burn them to heat our homes and they're in the fuel we use in our cars. So the simplest way to make a difference is to use less energy that comes from burning fossil fuels. Whenever you're not using the TV, computer, or video game console, switch them off. Don't just leave them on standby. That way, they won't use as much energy. Switching lights off when no one is in a room is another easy way to reduce the amount of energy used. It's easy to switch them off. If we all unplugged our mobile phone and tablet chargers after using them, we could close a big coal-fired power station. We could all walk or cycle short distances instead of driving to reduce the amount of fuel we use in our cars. If it's possible, walk or cycle to school instead of taking the bus. You'll get fitter too.
Phil, the forest scientist, told us that trees absorb carbon in the atmosphere and help reduce the amount of greenhouse gases. So what happens when we cut down forests to make room for farms?
Many acres of forest are lost to farm grains to feed cows, to feed us. This land would be able to feed many more people if we ate the grains ourselves. So by not letting food go to waste or by eating less meat, we have a way to preserve forests and help us reduce the amount of greenhouse gases.
Thanks, Rosita. There are some brilliant tips there.
Marina, we've forgotten something else that kids can do to help tackle climate change.
What's that, Mappy?
They can become climate explorers too.
Of course! We've met lots of really cool scientists who study every corner of the world to find out more about the Earth's climate and how it's changing.
From volcanoes to coral reefs and tropical islands.
Up in the clouds and into the deepest forests.
Looking at animals, plants, fossils and oceans.
Using computers, drones, aeroplanes and lasers. There's tons of careers you can get stuck into when you're a grown-up to really make a difference and learn more about our wonderful planet. Now, what about a walk to the woods to count some tree rings?
Good idea, Marina. I think we've earned a break.
Marina Ventura's Climate Explorers, supported by the Natural Environment Research Council, the science of the natural world. Find out more at funkidslive.com/marina.
Right, let's get all the science that has been in the news for one of the last weeks of 2019. The deepest point on land has been identified in East Antarctica. It's under the Denman Glacier, which still counts as land. It reaches 3.5 kilometres under sea level. Only in the ocean does the planet get deeper. Also, the chief engineer of the Bloodhound car is 99% sure that the car will reach a land speed record, and they hope the speed will get to over 800 miles an hour. We've spoken about the Bloodhound on this show for ages. Now, the current land speed record is 763 miles an hour. Bloodhound, they have tested. They have 200 air pressure sensors on it, loads of temperature readers and strain gauges so they can figure out how to get faster. And now they are pretty sure they will get the world record. And finally, scientists have calculated the lifespan of extinct animals from DNA that was left behind. Our extinct cousins, the Neanderthals and Denisovians, they reached the ripe old age of 38. And woolly mammoths would live to be about 70, they found. Scientists also discovered that bowhead whales could be the longest lived mammal ever. They would reach about 250 years old. And that is it for this week's Fun Kids Science Weekly, our last one before Christmas Day is finally here. Remember, if you get any new devices for the big day, smartphones, tablets, smart speakers, stuff like that, make one of the first things that you do is subscribe to the show so you can carry on joining us on these adventures throughout the universe. I will see you before the end of the year. We're back with a Best of 2019 special bumper episode. If you missed any of the amazing guests that we've had on in the last 12 months, we've got a pick of some of the greatest on the way. Christmas Day, I think that's going to come out, so make sure you look out for that. If you've got any questions that you want answered next year on the show, make sure you leave it as a review for the Fun Kids Science Weekly over on Apple Podcasts. Looking forward to cracking through some of those questions and talking to incredibly smart scientists next year. When you're on Apple Podcasts, a brilliant place that you can hear loads of incredible science series. You've heard some today. We've got loads more on there, on Google, on Spotify as well. And Fun Kids, we're a children's radio station from the UK. You can hear us all around the country on your DAB digital radio, on that free Fun Kids app, and at funkidslive.com.